This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to talk about a ProPublica investigation exposing how Facebook undermines privacy protections for its 2 billion WhatsApp users. The platform has been used by journalists, dissidents, and whistleblowers across the world, but there have been a lot of questions surrounding privacy issues since Facebook bought WhatsApp in 2014 for a whopping $19 billion. WhatsApp, more than 1,000 contract workers in Austin, Texas, Dublin, and Singapore use extensive monitoring software to sift through millions of private messages, images, and videos. That information is then shared with prosecutors. In one case, WhatsApp user data helped prosecutors build a high-profile case against a Treasury Department employee who linked confidential documents to BuzzFeed that exposed how dirty money flows through U.S. banks. Joining us to talk about this is Peter Elkind. He broke this story with his colleagues at ProPublica. Peter Elkind is an award-winning investigative journalist at ProPublica, co-author of the national bestseller, The Smartest Guys in the Room, The Amazing Rise and Scandalous Fall of Enron. He's written for the New York Times Magazine, The Washington Post, and other publications. Hi, Peter. Thank you so much for joining us and looking into this important story.
Thanks very much, Rose. It's good to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you. So first off, just some basic information. It's important to remember that in 2014, Facebook bought the messaging service WhatsApp for a whopping $19 billion.
Yes, no, that's exactly right. It was a huge investment, and it was a very small company in terms of its employees and, you know, started by two owners. And actually, that $19 billion, given that there was a chunk of stock involved with Facebook shares rising rapidly, actually turned into $22 billion very rapidly.
Wow. And just to remind people, and for those who aren't familiar with WhatsApp, it's the world's largest messaging service. It's got more than 2 billion monthly users. I've used it a few times to talk to a friend who lives in Spain. It doesn't cost me anything. Can you just tell us overall what people use WhatsApp for?
Sure. It's very popular in countries outside the U.S. In fact, in a number of countries, it's really by far the dominant means of communicating. It allows free messaging, free chats, free phone calls, even free video conferencing and free video chats. And as I said, it's really kind of the default means of communication in many countries. It's much less sort of known and a player in the U.S., but in many countries across the world, India, Brazil, and others, it is the sort of go-to application for communicating.
And 2 billion users, I mean, that's a massive number.
Oh, no question about it. It's staggering. They have an enormous user base.
You know, when I've used WhatsApp, I always wondered, well, how do they make money? And you write that since paying $22 billion to buy WhatsApp in 2014, Facebook has been trying to figure out how to generate profits from a service that does not charge its users a penny. So tell us more about that.
Sure, that's exactly right. And it's a really interesting question. And when Facebook bought WhatsApp, there were a lot of jaws that had dropped about paying this price for a company that made very little revenue. At the time, they charged irregularly, just occasionally charged users a tiny annual fee. Most users didn't get charged it. It usually was charged only after the first year, and it brought in very little revenue. Facebook pretty quickly got rid of that annual fee. And the reason Facebook bought this company in the first place was really as a defensive maneuver. WhatsApp was growing very popular across the world, and it was worried about the competitive threat that posed to Facebook Messenger and other platforms. They also wanted to keep WhatsApp out of the hands of rival companies like Google that were sniffing around WhatsApp. So the thinking was at Facebook, well, we'll pay this money, we'll keep it out of competitors' hands, and somewhere down the road, we'll figure out how to leverage this enormous and growing user base. We'll figure out some way to monetize it. And that's what Facebook's been sort of struggling to do ever since.
Right, because we did a show with Shira Frankel of the New York Times about Facebook and how they have really changed the game on advertising and sharing information to make money from users' personal information.
That's right, and the purchase of WhatsApp was especially kind of a mix of discordant corporate personalities, because you know, as you mentioned, Facebook has made its many billions and its fortune on targeted advertising based on detailed user information. And WhatsApp, on the other hand, before it was purchased by Facebook, its two co-founders openly reviled advertising. They said, you know, we think it's horrible. We'll never want to participate and we'll never want to have any advertising on our platform. We think that, you know, companies that are using advertising or targeting you with your data and collecting data, we don't want to be in that business. They were as brazenly and openly anti-advertising, namely anti the way that Facebook does business, as they could possibly be.
So let's get into what you all exposed. You report that WhatsApp has more than 1,000 contract workers filling floors of office buildings in Austin, Texas, Dublin, and Singapore. And they're hourly workers. They make around $16.50 an hour, and they're using special Facebook software to sift through millions of private messages, images, and videos. So tell us more about this Facebook software.
Sure. Well, the software is just sort of the platform that Facebook uses, gives to these contract moderators to go through the content. The important distinction to make is that WhatsApp prides itself on being end-to-end encrypted, which means that nobody they assure users that nobody can read your messages except you and the person you're sending it to. Not even us being Facebook and WhatsApp. A major focus of our story is saying, well, that's not exactly right. That while content is end-to-end encrypted and can't be read by anybody else, that when a user chooses to report it, allegedly for abuse or perhaps because they're pranking somebody or retaliating against somebody, it actually sends the most recent five messages to this unseen, undiscussed group of content moderators that WhatsApp has hired, who then sift through the material and, again, use the software to look at chats, look at images, and look at video as well. And there's given the size of the platform and the amount of stuff that's reported, there's a whole lot of content that actually is examined by these outside contractors who are kind of poorly paid and receive limited supervision.
You and your colleagues interviewed 29 current and former moderators, and you found that most of them are in their 20s and 30s. They've got experience as store clerks, grocery checkers, and baristas, and they were hired and employed by Accenture. This is a massive corporate contractor that works for Facebook and other Fortune 500 giants. So why are these people specifically interviewed to do this kind of flagging?
Yeah. Well, it is actually very similar to the armies of content moderators that Facebook employs to look at content for Facebook and Instagram. The big difference is that while Facebook acknowledges openly that it's got literally, 15,000 plus of these contractors working for Facebook and Instagram, reviewing content, looking at individual message mailboxes, doing all sorts of stuff, it's really tried to keep the WhatsApp content for a secret, to the point that they have transparency reports for what the content moderators at Facebook and Instagram do. They have no disclosure at all, no transparency reports on a quarterly basis or any regular basis for what the WhatsApp people do. It's sort of this thing that can't be mentioned and can't be named. At one point, the head of WhatsApp this past year, we talk about this example in our story, was interviewed, and he was talking about how they police the platform, which is a tricky issue, the tension between privacy and policing a platform, which I'm sure we'll talk about more. And he cited, we use these user reports, and that's how we do it. And he was explicitly asked, with a user base of 2 billion users, you must get a lot of reports. Who does this? Who does this work? How do you police it? What do you do? And he went on at some length saying, we have 1,000 people at Facebook that work on this. He didn't mention at all the content moderators. It's this group that is, Facebook and WhatsApp have really struggled to keep invisible in the name of promoting their privacy narrative.
You report that these moderators are instructed to tell anyone who asks that they work for Accenture and are required to sign sweeping non-disclosure agreements. Almost all of the current and former moderators interviewed by ProPublica insisted on anonymity. So tell us more about this. They cannot say they work for Facebook or WhatsApp. They have to say they work for Accenture.
Sure. That's the issue. And again, this is very similar to the way the content moderators for Facebook and Instagram are instructed and that they work. Accenture employs a whole lot of content moderators for Facebook and Instagram and employs, as we describe, more than 1,000 for WhatsApp. But when they're brought on, they actually are responding to ads that don't disclose who they're going to be working for. Their solicitations, ads for content moderation for a company. It's extremely vague. It's only when they're brought on and essentially when they're hired that they're disclosed who they'll be working for. And then they receive training for that. But they are required to sign NDAs. And that's been the case for the content moderators for all of the three Facebook platforms.
Today, we're speaking with Peter Elkind, an investigative journalist with ProPublica. Peter and his colleagues have an important piece out, which you can find at yourcallradio.org, How Facebook Undermines Privacy Protections for Its 2 Billion WhatsApp Users. So thinking about these contractors reading all of these messages, what raises red flags for them? What are they told to look for?
Sure. Well, they police all sorts of things. And again, what they're looking at is what's reported by users. And sometimes, you know, a lot of the time, what's reported is genuinely abusive content. They might be getting spam. They might be getting child exploitation material. There's sextortion. There's all sorts of sort of nasty stuff that, you know, that is then sent to the content moderators who look it over. They're also policing how well, businesses are conducting themselves on WhatsApp's platform. In other words, there's kind of managing WhatsApp's efforts to monetize the business by creating connections between users and small businesses across the world. So they have all kinds of cues, which are screened also by artificial intelligence. And they then get these sort of a constant stream of content, which might be about sextortion. It might be about terrorist speech. It might be about political speech. And they are in the position of either banning an account, ignoring it, or sort of placing the account on watch. That's what they do.
I mean, some of this content is really intense for such young people with little to no experience doing this.
It is. There's no question about it. And they're given access to this stuff after fairly little training. And it has the impact on them that it has on the other content moderators, you know, which is there are a lot of folks that have had PTSD. I mean, just imagine, you know, that you're sitting in front of a computer screen and, you know, you're required to review at a pace of less than a minute, hundreds of explicit images a day. It might be child pornography. It might be literally somebody having a beheading, terrorist kind of imagery. There's a lot of really horrible stuff that some of them are looking at for extended periods of time, and it certainly has an effect on them.
You all learned that some of this information helped prosecutors build a high-profile case against a Treasury Department employee who linked confidential documents to BuzzFeed that exposed how dirty money flows through U.S. banks. Can you tell us more about this?
Sure. This is a case that BuzzFeed had reported about a Treasury Department whistleblower who was concerned about suspicious activity reports that had come to Treasury, and she was prosecuted for providing information to BuzzFeed. We found out that WhatsApp user data played a significant role in bringing a case against her in the Treasury, in the government, in the FBI, identifying her as the whistleblower, and then bringing a prosecution against her.
And you tried to talk with Facebook and WhatsApp, well, the same company, but you tried to talk to Facebook and Accenture, I'll say, about this, but they did not comment, right?
Well, that's not exactly right. Accenture declined any comment and referred all questions to Facebook. So definitely true about Accenture, which, you know, WhatsApp and Facebook are a huge client for the company. And it's a very large business providing contract employees doing work like this. WhatsApp, on the other hand, did respond to us, you know, extensively in writing. They provided answers to specific questions through a spokesman, but they didn't provide any people to actually give us interviews. We wanted to interview executives of WhatsApp who were involved in this whole operation, and as well as the head of WhatsApp, and they declined to make them available.
You know, at a time when so many people, like this Treasury Department employee, for example, are using these services to leak information, this sends a really strong message to future whistleblowers.
It does. And there's really tricky issues and interesting issues in all of this. You know, certainly there's a public interest in seeing the social media platforms rid of abuse and child exploitation materials. On the other hand, you know, depending on how you do it, there's a price to be paid in terms of user security. And that's the balance that what Facebook and WhatsApp are really trying to have it both ways in a lot of ways, it seems to us. You know, on the one hand, they're assuring that Facebook and WhatsApp can't see any of the content on the platform, that no one outside of the chat, not even WhatsApp, can read or listen to it. But there are exceptions. And, you know, they're not just exceptions for child abuse, but also it's used by others to retaliate against individuals, to prank people. And they reveal five messages in a thread to these content moderators, some of which may be very benign. In fact, regularly are benign. There's a lot of false reporting, although exactly how much WhatsApp doesn't say. One of the issues we have, that we raised in the story, is the lack of transparency on WhatsApp's part, even compared to how Facebook discloses what it does with content moderation on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, because you have to think about the chain and how that works. I'm picturing a 22-year-old, 25-year-old in an office looking at these horrific images, which, of course, that kind of thing needs to be monitored and then dealt with. But in the case of whistleblowers, I mean, who makes the call and how are those decisions made?
Yes, and actually that case wasn't a product of a report by users. That was an example of how much metadata that Facebook and WhatsApp collect on users. Specifically, WhatsApp collects on users and has available to share with law enforcement. And while the company does not break out how often and how routinely it provides information to law enforcement, the overall statistics that Facebook provides about all of its platforms show that there are more requests coming from law enforcement and that it's cooperating in terms of providing information more and more over time.
We have just about a minute or so left. How do you think the Biden administration is going to deal with all of this? Just recently, Facebook was fined a record 225 million euros, which is 267 million US, by Ireland's data watchdog for breaching EU data privacy rules. How do you think the Biden administration is going to deal with a company like Facebook?
Well, I think... And by the way, it was fined. Facebook was fined $5 billion by the Federal Trade Commission in 2019, which is 20 times greater than any other fine that had ever taken place. And that was for privacy violations. The short version is the first big signal is the Biden administration has refiled a antitrust complaint brought against Facebook, where one of the remedies it's seeking is to force Facebook to sell Instagram and WhatsApp. And so I think that suggests that they are not going to be easy on the company.
And what are you and your colleagues working on next? Because there are so many stories to uncover when it comes to a massive company like Facebook.
There are plenty of stories to uncover. You're exactly right. But can't talk about that would love you to stay tuned.
Well, this is why outlets like ProPublica are so, so important. We really need independent media. So, Peter, thanks to you and your colleagues for exposing this story, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Peter Elkind is an award-winning investigative journalist with ProPublica, and you can find the piece, How Facebook Undermines Its Privacy Protections for Its 2 Billion WhatsApp Users, at yourcallradio.org. You can also find our recent show about the book, An Ugly Truth, Inside Facebook's Battle for Domination. We were joined by New York Times reporter Shira Frankel. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Joanne Marr and Kevin Vance for engineering our show, and thanks to Ethan Elkind, who filled in for me while I took a couple of days off. Thank you so much, Ethan. And we hope you can join us on Monday. We are going to be joined by environmental journalist Jimmy Tobias, who will discuss the plight of red wolves in the United States. In the 70s, there were fewer than 20 red wolves left, but a decades-long federal reintroduction effort boosted the wild population about tenfold. Unfortunately, we've gone back to just about 20 red wolves left rambling across the landscape. How did this happen, and what does this mean for other extinct animals? We hope you can join us on Monday. You can find more information about the show, listen to past shows, and sign up for our podcast at yourcallradio.org. You can also follow us and interact with us on Twitter at yourcallradio. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.